I'm Andrea Hope, and this is To Mother. Episode 3, The Right Time to Have Kids. Welcome back to my podcast. If this is your first time tuning in, I'm Andrea Hope, and I'm a poet and a Baha'i and a mom, among many other things. And on this show, I share some of my poetry, some of my practical tips, and my reflections about being a mom and trying to parent with purpose in the modern world and draw from religion and spirituality along the journey. First episode was about the fast, and then about Nowruz, and a little bit about coronavirus, and then today we're going to get into mothering. I had thought to start with trying to conceive and then go through the whole journey until the child is maybe out of the house, maybe even when they're out of the house. We'll see how far we go. But then I thought, you know, before you even have kids, before you even take that first step of trying to conceive, there is a stage before that when you're deciding that it's time. Is there a right time to have kids? So the thing I want to talk about first is marriage, because in the Baha'i faith, it's promoted that there's chastity before marriage, and then there's the commitment of marriage, and the main purpose of marriage is to have children. I'm gonna approach it from this perspective in the writings. So the quote I chose on this topic is from a letter written on behalf of Shoghi Effendi. The Baha'i teachings do not only encourage marital life, considering it the natural and normal way of existence for every sane, healthy, and socially conscious and responsible person, but raise marriage to the station of a divine institution. Its chief and sacred purpose being the perpetuation of the human race, which is the very flower of the entire creation, and its elevation to the true station destined for it by God. So I'll start off by saying that, you know, it's just really amazing in the Baha'i faith, marriage is considered a divine institution. And what does that mean? You think about the other institutions in the faith, like assemblies. I find it so wonderful because it really elevates this marriage to being more than about just me and my husband. And I think that in society in general, marriage has become more and more this idea of Bonnie and Clyde. It's me and you against the world. It's a lot of pressure to put on a marriage and to put on another person. And so I don't ascribe to that. Like my husband and I are friends, and I definitely don't believe that it's me and him against the world. I think what makes our marriage work is that we are open and respectful and loving of each other, but we also see ourselves as part of something bigger than ourselves. And I think that has been really helpful for me in times that I've been challenged with wanting my independence or, you know, struggling with different things. And then I look around and I see how much we're involved in more than just us. So, you know, I think the fact that we're an intercultural, international, interlingual family, my husband's from Poland, he speaks Polish as his first language and English as a second language. I was born in the Bahamas, grew up in the United States, I speak English as my first language. We are different races, we come from different cultures. So already that's having an impact on the community around us. And then what does marriage mean for our families, for our community activities, for our service to the world, for the examples that we're setting for others? And there's a lot of ways that I definitely recognize that I'm stronger and I can give more support to other people when I have a stable home life. And so, yeah, I think this mentality that marriage is an institution is a really powerful one to say, okay, this marriage isn't just affecting me and my needs and isn't just here to fulfill me and my needs. It's here to help me grow. And it's also here to be of service too, because in the Baha'i faith, there's, you know, this belief that the family is the foundation of the society. And I think that's so true. When you pick your friends, you tend to pick your friends who have similar interests in you, maybe similar personalities. But when your family, you have no idea. And I think one of the benefits of that is that you learn to communicate and to love and to understand people who have different perspectives. If you're really open and that's your desire, that's something I'm really grateful for, that I have people in my family who do think differently than me and who do have very different interests. And, you know, it's a work in progress for me as well. But I think, okay, if I can't do it with my family, then how can I expect to have world peace? You know, if you can't even get along with the people who you love or at least have a close tie to you because you grew up together, then how are we expecting to apply this to the whole world? So for me, a family is really a place to practice, because if you have a healthy family life for the most part, then it's a safe space to do that. Now, I should say any experience that I am giving or speaking from is in an environment where things are generally healthy and respectful. So I think that's just very important because I know people, and I think if we really sat down and asked our friends and turned to our family members, we'd realize that we all know people who have been in unhealthy or abusive situations, and we kind of don't talk about that enough. So I just really want to be clear that when I'm saying these things, I'm talking about a generally healthy and respectful relationship or family life. That doesn't mean that someone doesn't call you out on your stuff, because my husband definitely does and my family definitely does. But you know, obviously there's a difference between doing that in a healthy way and having conflicts that you can resolve, and doing that in a way that intimidates a person or makes a person feel less than. And so I just want to be very clear about that. If you do feel like you're in a situation where you're not sure if it's healthy, that's a great indication for you to go and seek help and ask, or at least have the conversation with someone. That being said, I don't think there's a perfect time in your relationship to have kids. It is one of those things where I think it's important that you accept that part of the learning is in the process. And when you're in it, you can still reach out to resources and reflect. And I think this whole cycle of study, action, reflection is so important. And be in a mode of learning. I think that's a big deal. Be in a mode of learning while you're doing anything, while you're married, while you're having kids, while you're working, is a big deal. So you don't feel like you have to know everything before you step in. So you're not thinking, oh, I wish I would have known this before, but now it's too late. But you're thinking, you know, I wish I would have known this before, but I still have an opportunity to improve it and to work on it and to learn and to give myself some grace, but to also hold myself accountable. So I thought one thing that you could do to prepare yourself, babysitting with your partner before you start trying to get pregnant. Now, I think a lot of people are in the situation that me and my husband were in, where I love kids, have always loved kids, professionally work with kids, and my husband has been around kids a little bit, and he wanted to have kids, but had no idea how to handle little kids. And one of the things that happened was I was approached by one of our friends with the opportunity to babysit her son for a few hours every weekend while she was doing some office work. So my husband's like, you want to do it, don't you? And I was like, of course I want to do it. And I was like, oh, this is great, because then my husband also has the opportunity to do this with me. So I invited him to come with me. And the first day he's like, okay, I'll come at the beginning and see, you know, how it goes. And he ended up staying the whole day with us. And that was just a wonderful way for him to have an understanding of what it's like. And for this segment, I actually turned to my sister. I have two sisters, but I turned to my sister Elizabeth to get her advice. And she actually had some interesting insights where she felt like new moms especially might be hesitant to have someone else around their young child without them around. And so she gave another suggestion for how to get practice with young children.
I would do it in more of a mother's helper type of way, where you spend a day with the mom or a few hours with the mom, as opposed to being with the baby by yourself. So like, okay, dinner time is usually a stressful time for mom. So if you tell your friend, hey, I can come help out with the baby while you make dinner, for you to really have that true experience of what it's like, I would say at those vulnerable times. So like if there's more than one child involved, like say if the mom has to go to a doctor's appointment, that would be a great time to get experience. Because those are the times where I feel like it's most challenging, like being out in public with the baby is much, much more challenging. Definitely, I would say spending a day with a couple and just seeing what it's like to get a, you know, realistic approach of, I like that they did this. I'm not sure if I feel comfortable with that. And then you can go and seek out more information.
Yeah, you know, that's something I...
Zaya's learning about animals. She really likes animals. Moo, moo, moo. What do you think? Okay, this could be controversial. I'm going to own up to this. This could be controversial, but I wanted to know what you might think about kittens and puppies.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, but I personally do not like when people compare their animals to children. However, a good indication of whether or not you're ready to be a parent is if you can manage not just a pet, like a brand new puppy or a brand new kitten. The amount of time and dedication that it takes to manage a newborn, that is the quickest way to test your patience.
Okay, we're on the same page with this. This is exactly what I'm thinking, because Martin and I had a kitten before we had children. But yeah, exactly the same thought that you have. I don't think that pets are kids, but I think that it is a great preparation, because that was the first time, like, I was waking up in the middle of the night because someone was crying. So, you know, and when we got home, woo, like, you've been gone all day, I've been waiting.
Right.
And our kitten knew which drawer was the toy drawer. So our kitten was like, this is my drawer, this is my stuff. Like, let's go, you know, let's make it happen. It's kind of like going on a road trip. Like people will tell you if you want to, like, see if a person's good for you, go on a road trip and get lost together. And obviously getting lost with someone isn't the same as being married to someone, but it's a good indication of that person's temperament and, like, your ability to communicate. And that's how I think it's going to be helpful in determining for you what work you need to do or what are going to be the challenges when you become a parent.
So that was my sister, Elizabeth. I'm glad that we agreed and that I didn't offend her, and I hope we're not offending you, but this is our experience. And the resource that I'm going to share with this idea of strengthening your marriage or laying a good foundation is a book called This Is Really Not At All Your Typical Book About Marriage. And it's by a dear friend of mine named Sapa. I asked him to give us a little bit information about the book and how it came to be. And it's a cute story, so we're going to end the show this time with his explanation.
Hi, Andrea. Thanks a lot for including me in your podcast. So my name is Sapa, and towards the end of 2013, when I was in my 20s, several of my friends divorced in very rapid succession. And this was a particular shock to me, because it was clear to me that each of these friends of mine, all of them, they highly respected the institution of marriage. In other words, it suddenly became very clear to me that just wanting to stay married wasn't a strong enough requirement to actually be able to stay married. So I started asking some people what their thoughts were on the topic of marriage, and I realized that people were giving me very different responses and opinions for what makes up a successful marriage. But what was interesting was that they weren't really treating their own thoughts as opinions. Many of them were quite convinced that their answer was the answer. I was aware at the time that, as I am now, in fact, that a topic as rich and vast as marriage probably can't be simplified down to one or two slogans. But I was nevertheless struck by just how poorly we seemed to understand marriage. I did come across lots of good books on the subject of marriage, but most of them seemed somehow inadequate. Something was a bit off about them. Some of them felt a bit too theoretical, and I felt they didn't really tackle some of the very real and raw challenges that modern marriages are faced with. Some other books seem to only focus on these challenges, actually, and maybe they lacked some kind of a spiritual dimension. And lastly, one fundamental problem with these books was that they were books, and the people who could most benefit from the knowledge contained in those books, meaning the younger generations, are becoming less and less likely to pick up a book and read it cover to cover. So it seemed to me that it could be useful to create a new book, or a new format for this knowledge, where we would gather knowledge from several other sources in a way that could be appealing enough, and dare I say, entertaining enough, for the younger generation that I myself found myself in. So fast forward 3 years, much research and interviewing later, and I published an interactive iBook. It was a bold idea, containing neat videos, funny internet memes, but all of them trying to deliver nuggets of wisdom that I had gleaned from other sources. It even had interactive comments sections. I was really proud of this one. So after reading a particular page in the book, you could click on a link that would take you to a comments thread on Tumblr about that specific piece of content, where you could share your own thoughts and see what other readers had to say about that, and hopefully learn from each other. So this grand and bold and beautiful idea ended up being executed flawlessly, except for one thing. It only sold about 5 or 6 copies. And I have to say, one of those purchases was done by myself just to see if the thing was working right. Looking back, however, I am really pleased that I had created the book, even if I see lots of issues with it, and maybe that's why it only sold 5 or 6 copies, mostly because I myself learned a lot from it. I remember that a trusted and wise friend of mine one day got annoyed at me, and he said, "Sapa, what are you doing? You're a single man in his 20s writing a book about marriage. You should be getting married instead." And here lies the ultimate plot twist. Do you remember the 5 or 6 copies that the book sold? Well, one of them was purchased by a young lady shortly after we met, and almost exactly a year after that purchase, we got married. So if nothing else, the book helped me in a very direct way.
To Mother is an individual initiative and provides only the personal reflections and insights of its creator. That's me. For more information about the Baha'i Faith, including access to the official writings and contacts for Baha'is in your community, please visit Baha'i.org.